In a very short time, we've been forced to reevaluate our values. Values related to employment, family, and home. As we come out of two history-making pandemic years, connecting with others is more important than ever. But it's safe to say that the way we can and want to connect has changed. We are not-for-profit professionals supporting adults to live, work, and grow in a rapidly changing world. Connection means that we need to work together to build and put into practice whole and multifaceted plans for our clients so that they can reach their own personal successes. For some of us, life is returning to pre-pandemic norms, where we work out of an office on a set schedule. Others may have no office to return to and may spend working hours on a couch or kitchen table in their own home. And some may be straddling schedules where they sometimes go to the office and sometimes work in their own personal space. These experiences are the same for our clients who are navigating a world that is still deciding what work-life will look like. How can we support them while adapting ourselves? Whoever and wherever you are, if you support adults in learning and life, the Getting Connected podcast may be for you. Join us as we talk through relevant topics that support you to do your best work. Grab a coffee, give us just a few minutes of your workday, and let's connect. Hi, everyone. I am Ashley Hoth-Murray, and this is the Getting Connected podcast. I am joined by my stylish co-host, Gay Douglas. How's it going, Gay?
Well, I'm feeling styling today, apparently. And it's probably a good thing that this podcast doesn't have video because I'm not really well styled today, not up to my usual.
You are.
But thank you for thinking so, Ashley. And it's for our audience out there, it's always fun because Ashley always introduces me with a new adjective. And we've now done dozens of these podcasts, but she's never used the same adjective twice.
That's right.
Thank you for that. I always look forward to hearing how I'm being described. And it always changes, apparently. I'm doing really, really well.
Awesome. Well, we have a great topic today. So let's dive right in. What's here, there, and everywhere, sometimes heartfelt, sometimes a little textbook, and always important? Land acknowledgements. In the last 5 years, we've seen large-scale movements like Every Child Matters, Black Lives Matter, and hashtag Me Too. There's the continued unearthing of atrocities in the thousands of unmarked child graves at residential schools across the country. And mobile devices have captured and highlighted the countless cases of police brutality towards racialized people. These events and others have led to a mainstream shift towards allyship. I would argue that land acknowledgements are the most institutionalized form of allyship that has come out of this shift, with most organizations and levels of governments adopting them in some form. But before we dive in, I think it's really important that we acknowledge that Gay and I are both white women who consider themselves to be allies, but we've not experienced racialized generational trauma. And I just want to point that out before we continue this conversation. When talking about land acknowledgement, what makes a good one compared to one that it's just lip service? And how can we keep the original intent of truth and reconciliation alive rather than allowing a land acknowledgement to become something that becomes routine?
Wow. Great introduction, Ashley, to a really important subject that I know you and I have really done a lot of thinking and talking about. So we're delighted to have Melissa Shongo with us today. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about Melissa. She's going to tell you a little bit about herself, and then we're going to move on with some questions. So Melissa is the Literacy and Basic Skills Coordinator at the Fort Erie Native Friendship Center. That center is located in Fort Erie, no surprise. She has been the coordinator for the last 5 years. In the past, she's had a number of different administrative roles related to literacy. I know that you've been a frontline instructor, Melissa, and ever achieving steps, and she is now the coordinator. She's also on the board of directors of the Ontario Native Literacy Coalition, the ONLC. And that's been a couple of years now, right, Melissa? You just joined not too long ago, 2 years ago. And so she has been working with the ONLC and their staff. And they always ensure that there's curriculum that is relevant from an Indigenous aspect. So I'm sure that you're enjoying not only your involvement on the board, but the knowledge that this really important curriculum is being developed for use with learners. Now, would you like to tell us anything about anything else about yourself, Melissa?
Yes. So my name is Melissa Shango, and I am the literacy coordinator at the Fort Erie Native Friendship Center. And I am from Six Nations of the Grand River, and I am of the Onondaga Nation.
Wonderful. Thank you. Gives us some context and perspective to start. Maybe, you know, I was thinking, Ashley, as you were talking about land acknowledgement, maybe not everyone is aware of that particular practice. I am surprised sometimes when I'm attending meetings outside of literacy and basic skills. So a land acknowledgement, this is my definition, and perhaps it isn't yours, Melissa or Ashley, but to me, it is a call to order at a beginning of a meeting to identify the context, the history, and to recognize the roots and the privilege we have of living on Indigenous lands. And it is usually said at the beginning of a meeting. Sometimes it's brief, sometimes it's long, but at the heart of the land acknowledgement, it's a recognition and an appreciation. So that's my take. I would like to ask Melissa what she believes is the significance of land acknowledgement and why it matters.
Thank you, Gabe. So to me, land acknowledgement is done at the beginning of a meeting or a gathering, like you said, and it recognizes Indigenous people's continuous relationship with the land. So acknowledging the land is an important part of reconciliation. And it shows acknowledgement and brings to light any treaties, broken promises, as well as the residential school era. That's why we have Orange Shirt Day, that is September 30th, is to bring to light and gives people a chance to reflect on what happened and, you know, wear your orange shirt and show some support there. It's also a small step to take in reconciliation and build a more positive relationship between Indigenous and non-Indigenous people.
So it matters to you.
Yes, it really does matter. It shows respect, most of all, towards Indigenous people to start off your meeting like that and to acknowledge right. them.
So this is sort of an aside question, but as you're speaking, when you attend a meeting and there is no land acknowledgement, is that a different experience for you than when there is?
It does kind of work as a different experience, mostly because a land acknowledgement can also teach the employees of the organization, you know, a little something, and right. can teach them, you know, to show respect in that way before a meeting and at the beginning of a gathering.
Okay, that's interesting to know. So, Ashley, I think you have a question.
Yeah. So, Melissa, what makes a good land acknowledgement? Besides just saying at the beginning of the meeting, are there certain aspects that you know, are important to include?
Yeah, I would say so. So first of all, anyone doing a land acknowledgement, always make sure that you know why you are doing the land acknowledgement. Know that there's a purpose to the land acknowledgement. And also do it with a good mind. Do it with a positive mindset and being respectful. Another thing I would say is do a little bit of research to which Indigenous peoples inhabited like your area or like your region to, you know which Indigenous people were on that territory. Also to explain why you were acknowledging the land. So, you know, we're acknowledging the land to give respect towards Indigenous people, to acknowledge that it was, you know, a continuing relationship with Indigenous people was the land, and address, also address the relevance of the Indigenous rights of the subject matter. So really point out any Indigenous rights that you can relating to the land, and also as far as you can, like in your meeting.
Yeah, interesting. Some really specific points that need to be included. So let's say you are someone who has never, you've already mentioned some of these, but let's say you're someone who's asked to provide a land acknowledgement and you're someone who's never written one. Like, where do they start? Is there somewhere they can go, or is there not a template, but is there like, what key pieces make a good land acknowledgement? And is there an organization that they could look to?
So you can always look out to your nearest friendship centers if you need help. And also, you know, do your research on what Indigenous people were on that territory as well. So in North America, we call, like, I know you guys might have heard the term Turtle Island. So that would be North America. That, for example, there is certain terms that you can look up that would be used in a way of, I would say, respect towards Indigenous people, such as like the Haudenosaunee and the Anishinaabe people. So the Haudenosaunee are people of the Longhouse. So really anyone on like the Six Nations Reserve would be Haudenosaunee, and that follow like a Longhouse way. And that goes back to like our creation story. And of course you could see on like the Haudenosaunee flag, there is five nations on there, and the Tuscarora, which joined in 1722. Came later on.
Here's a weird question that I just thought of. We actually came up with, we came across this issue, Gay and I, when we were presenting at a meeting a few weeks ago, and we were speaking from physically a different space than most of the participants. So how do you alter a land acknowledgement when, let's say, more and more of us are having these virtual meetings? So we might not all be meeting on the same traditional lands under the same treaties. So how would you suggest someone adapts for a virtual meeting? Do they speak from where they are, or do they research where the participants are?
I would say whoever is doing the land acknowledgement to take into account wherever they are.
That is helpful. It was one of those things that came up like just before we were going to present as well. And I think we went with the more global approach. Yes. It was one of those questions that we had. So it's good. It's good to talk about moving forward. And another question that came up, and we were actually talking about this just before we went to record. What would you say to somebody who is very like nervous? So I'm just going to speak from personal experience. So as somebody who is non-Indigenous, you sometimes have a fear of being of offending somebody or not doing something the right way. And what can happen is we can end up with these kind of generic land acknowledgements that maybe don't have the same authenticity or the same emotion and maybe aren't as heartfelt. So what would you say to someone who was nervous about, you know, providing a land acknowledgement at the beginning of a meeting?
So the best thing I can say to that is, I only speak for myself, but as long as someone is coming in with a good mind and is being honest and isn't intentionally trying to offend anybody, I think you're okay.
Yeah, I have a friend who, she works for a university in Ontario, and she is non-Indigenous, and she was presenting with somebody, or she was opening a meeting with somebody who is Indigenous, and she I don't know if she assumed or if in past meetings, her colleague had been the one who had done the land acknowledgement, and she just turned to her and said, "All right, you're up. You're going to open the meeting with this land acknowledgement." And my friend was nervous because she had nothing prepared. And so she went up to the podium and she gave this land acknowledgement and she walked off and she was very nervous. And she said to her colleague, like, "How did I do? Was that okay?" And her colleague, her Indigenous colleague, said, "That was one of the best land acknowledgements because you spoke it from the heart, from what you knew, rather than taking a paper up that included all the words that you were supposed to say." Right. And, you know, rather than just reading it off. So it came from a place of authenticity. And even if she was nervous and fumbled a bit, I mean, it almost could mean more.
So I think as long as, you know, it's coming from a good mind and your heart and your mind are in the right places, then I think it comes off authentic and respectful.
That's good to know. I must say that I'm very pleased with other meetings I attend that I would not have expected to hear land acknowledgements, where there's very limited exposure to the Indigenous cultures and Indigenous peoples. Some of the most sort of unusual organizations that have adopted it. So I really do concur with what you're saying, Melissa, about just the very fact of educating people who may not know the stories, who may not know the facts, is one of the most important things. And I've seen I'm thinking about one particular organization I know of that 5 years ago, there was very limited knowledge of Indigenous history, culture, geography. And now I must say that because of the land acknowledgements and the natural evolution, I think, in this group about curiosity and wanting to know more and wanting to know how to do better, it's really affecting the culture of that organization.
Yeah, I agree, Gay. And it also, you know, it teaches the employees about the land acknowledgements and Indigenous peoples in that way. And also, I feel like it started off with just a few organizations, and then it's slowly getting more and more recognized and more popular. Like, people are, more and more organizations are adapting to it.
Yes, absolutely. Becoming more common than not these days, I find. Okay, well, this is a really interesting, I think, a very practical conversation we're having, because we know that people are wanting to do their best and may really need some practical support to do that. I have a final question, and you never know, we often ask our final questions and then others emerge, but I'm going to ask this final question, and we purposely ask a final question of all of our podcast guests that's purposefully a little bit broad, and that way you can interpret and answer any way you like. What is one tool, material, resource that you find really, really helpful related to a land acknowledgement or not? What is one tool or resource that you wish people would use more?
So I might sound a little biased here, but I am going to say to stop into your local friendship center and, you know, do a little bit of research, you know, see the different kinds of programs that they have. And because really friendship centers have something for every age group, and you can always find what you need there. You know, and if you're just looking to, you know, learn more, I'm sure that they have resources there. You can stop in, you know, talk to anybody. We have cultural resource coordinators. There's really something for everybody at a friendship center. So, yeah, I would just say stop into your local friendship center. A lot of them have websites, Facebooks, all kinds of social media. So if you wanted to, you could go that route as well. Also, Good Learning Anywhere has a lot of really good resources. There's a lot of really good resources out there that are totally Indigenous owned. So if you want to even learn more about the land acknowledgements and what it means, I would say that is your best bet.
You know what? Two tremendous resources that I hadn't thought of for sure. And you know what? We were just having a conversation earlier with someone from an organization that has multiple services under one roof. That's how I would define a friendship center. So long ago, friendship centers began to gather numerous resources and programs under one roof. And we sometimes forget that that model has been in place for many years. So yes, and it's called a friendship center for a reason.
Exactly. Yeah.
Great. And great. Good Learning Anywhere. And let's talk about that for a moment. So much for the final question. Do you see how things change when we chat? It occurs to me that there are probably a number of non-Indigenous learners in literacy and basic skills in this province and staff who would like to learn more about Indigenous cultures. And Good Learning Anywhere, the online learning portal, is a great resource for that.
Yeah, they have a lot of really great resources on that site. You know, you can take courses and things like that and really just learn a little bit about Indigenous history. There's just a lot of things that you can learn from.
Thank you for that.
Indigenous site. You're welcome. And also, we are selling, a lot of Indigenous centers are selling their orange shirts for Orange Shirt Day just passed, but we would like, you know, it to be like more of like a year-round thing instead of, you know, just one day and then you put your orange shirt away. We want to try to make it so that it's, you know, it's a reflection and, you know, that everyone kind of realizes what happened in residential schools. And yeah, we just want to kind of bring those things to light more. You know, and if you are around in Fort Erie, we are selling them. So you can buy them at the Fort Erie Native Friendship Center. And I don't know if you guys know the story behind the orange shirt. But I don't know if a lot of people do, but it originally came from a woman. She is a residential school survivor and her name is Phyllis Webstad. And I actually met her, through a couple events that we had last week. And, what happened was on her first day of residential school, her grandmother bought her a beautiful new orange shirt to wear on her first day of residential school, and it was taken away. So it was taken away and she never got it back. So that's why we have the orange shirt, to kind of show reflection of, you know, of those things.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that, Melissa. I think I have three young children. Two are in grade school. And one thing that I have to say is where I think a lot of us, when we talk about institutionalizing of the land acknowledgement, and we're seeing it more and more, we didn't have the education in grade school to learn these stories, this history, and the ongoing the ongoing struggles of truth and reconciliation and efforts. But I'm happy to say that my kids have a completely different experience where they're like my sons could tell you that story, why they wear it. And it seems to be more and more embedded, which is very hopeful going forward in terms of acknowledging and reflecting. So I really appreciate, Gay and I both appreciate you joining us today for this extremely important topic. And at the beginning, you talked about land acknowledgements as a continuous relationship. And I think it's very important to just highlight that land acknowledgement should not just be about the history of the land, but also the future of the land and the ongoing contributions and also the ongoing struggles of Indigenous peoples and everything they mean to us as stewards and continued stewards of the land. So thank you very much. And thanks for listening, listener. We look forward to getting connected next time.